B2. Number 3A.
What we wanted to see this morning, was that linear way of thinking. That when we come out of a atomistic thinking, the first step is to think in the law of creativity. I have shown you this morning that evolution, as we know it today, and as Dewey showed it, really goes through seven stages which cannot be explained by natural science, and therefore attributes those changes, those seven stages, to a law which is spirit, that is a law which he calls the law of God. This is a sevenfold stage, and we said the first stage was the beginning of life. This is a whole evolution of 3 billion years, it's evolution. And the first stage is stage of mind, M is mind, and shows that there was, at a certain time, unexplainable, the law of creation. And therefore we have the first motion of living cells. Then he shows how this developed, we call that the second stage, spirit, how there was constantly unfoldment, unfoldment, diversification, diversification. We know that spirit diversifies, unfolds, that spirit unfolds, that there was unfoldment in spite of the law of entropy, the law of matter, which says that everything should recoil and recoil to the point of absolute death. He then showed that a third step, which we can call soul, occurred, namely, where suddenly man and the human brain appeared. Therefore, a transition from the organic, you see, to the mental, where the brain appeared, and where man became conscious of itself. The self-consciousness, self-identity of man appeared. That we know is soul when the identity of being appears. He then shows that suddenly a force, which we call principle, a force period appeared, namely where man began to become independent of his body and began to have spiritual and moral ideas. Now we know that ideas are ideas of principle, that principle rules for ideas. Therefore he shows that how is it that suddenly this mortal man has suddenly ideas, can suddenly think in abstract ideas. That he is no more subject to his instincts, but now begins to think in terms of ideas. A further stage he saw is what we call life, namely that on the whole surface of the earth you could see the spontaneous appearing of the very same thing. That's something which natural science cannot explain, because natural science rests on the law of cause and effect, and not on the law of spontaneity. That's the law of life, you know, that life is spontaneous. At the same time, over the different places, you have always the appearing of the very same thing. Not only that men appeared as the Pekingese men, or as the Java men, or the Neanderthal men, at the same time, at the various places, without any intercommunication, without any relationship with each other. So also in the mental and spiritual, we begin to see that ideas spontaneously arise, new ideas spontaneously arise, independent of each other, and therefore this gives us the proof that there must be a force or an intelligence, whatever we may call it, which is able to bring forth out of the infinite new ideas. And so this is one of the greatest miracles which we really have today. Stop. That's how far we came this morning, and then Dunui shows the sixth period, namely where he begins to see that man gets now dominion over the world, over himself, over his instincts, over the earth, and he becomes now master of the world, just as you have in the sixth day, that in the sixth day of creation man has given dominion over the whole world. It's a period where science, technology, experiments and so on enable man to master the earth. And so he comes to a final conclusion, namely what we would call love, namely that he sees that behind the whole evolution, behind the whole seven stages, must have been the last stage, namely a driving force. He calls it a telefinalistic cause, a telefinalistic power. Telefinalistic means, tele means aim to a far aim, and finalistic to arrive at. So he sees here, you see, that behind evolution, behind all those six stages which went over 3 billion years, there must have been an intelligence, the intelligence of love, which had a plan right from the beginning, an aim in view, which it wanted to achieve, which it wanted to arrive at. So, can you see again here exactly the law of creativity going over 3 billion years in the human? Now, the same law of creativity we see today, for instance, in the Bible, in the whole Bible history. If we regard not evolution over 3 billion years, but say the Bible history starting with 4000 BC up to now, we see in the Bible the same development over 1000-year period. Most of you know that story. I have now to be a bit careful what I do here. So let's take this as the Bible story of 7,000 years. This is the Bible. Now, what does the Bible tell us? The Bible tells us in the great line again the same story. Same story of the linear development from mind to spirit to soul to prince to life, truth and love. You know that the Bible story can be also put into seven stages. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, this is not good. 4, 5, 6, 7. Into seven stages, which have the same fundamental concept. Namely, you have the first 1000 year here from Adam to Noah, which is really coined, so to say, by the creative ability of God. All what we have here is the days of creation, the second record of creation. And of the second record of creation, you know how the story went on. And he begets, and he begets, and begets, and begets, and begets, until you get dizzy. And at the end of getting dizzy, the 1000 years are over. So you see again here the same thing, you see, creative mind at work as the main factor. Then you have the second 1000-year period of the Bible, starting with Noah, to the end of Noah's life and the building of Babel. The story of Noah, as you know, is that story of separating, where he made an ark if you take the definition of Noah in the glossary and of Ark in the glossary, I never know them by heart, thank God. You will see, because I never know anything by heart, but it's spiritual. You will see that it is all about spiritual reality, about separation. Shall I read you one of it? Just to Ark, the understanding of spirit, you see, destroying belief in matter. Noah, knowledge of the nothingness of material things and of the immortality of all that is spiritual. Can you see the stone of spirit? Or Babel, naturally, then the antipode of it, of mingling spirit and matter, which they did at that time. So, again, you see spirit. Then you come to the third thousand-year period, starting with Abraham. It was Abraham round about 2000 up to about 1000 BC. The whole story is about soul. Namely, it is the wandering out of the old sense of things. Abraham going out of his land, and the wandering begins with Abraham, then with Jacob, then Moses wandering through the wilderness until finally Moses reaches the promised land, and then they settle. It's all that passage from sense to soul. It's all about identity, namely naming. Everybody in that period is renamed. Nobody before that period had been renamed in the Bible. Nobody after that period had been renamed. Only within this period, everybody gets renamed. Abraham is renamed. Abraham, what you call Sarai, is renamed Sarah. Benomi is renamed as Benjamin. Jacob is renamed as Israel, and so on. God is renamed as the I Am. It's all about that sense that something was working in the Jewish nation there, which said, I have found my true identity. I have found my true self, my soul sense. Then, from that point, right about 1000 BC, until Jesus, here is the great break of the Old and New Testament, we have the first age of the kings, and then the prophetic age. It's all about who shall rule us, principle. It's let us also have a king, as other nations have a king. Let us be ruled by priests, by kings, and so on. And so we get there the first king of Israel, Saul, David, Solomon, etc., the breaking up of the kingdom period. The big kingdom period then switches over to the prophetic period. The moment the kingdom period has shown itself to be a mistake and Israel is brought to Babylon, then the prophetic idea, the true sense of government, to be governed by God, God's government, therefore not democratic government, but theocratic government is shown. It's all about principle and government of principle. Why did it come? Has anybody invented it? See, it's the same story that there is behind the whole development, a law of creativity, a law which says once a period is fulfilled, a next step breaks in on mankind. Then you have the break here, the fifth period, namely Jesus. Well, Jesus is typically that figure which came to give us life, so that we have life more abundantly. His main demonstration was the resurrection, the ascension, showing that life is eternal, that life is superabundant, that life is not in matter, and all that. So that we get here for the first 1000 year period, beginning with the Bible. Then we have the definite break. Here the Bible ends, and we come to the sixth period of science, and of science and health. With round about the 1000 AD, we have the first universities, we have the first Bill of Rights in England. It's the whole tone of man's consciousness, of man's scientific consciousness, of man's freedom. Truth is the liberator, is shown, and so we are right here at the end of the 6,000 year period, and we feel in our bones, so to say, the breaking in of the 7,000 period of love, namely that period which brings something completely new, which wants to go past science. It is science which wants to go past science, really, to the oneness of being, to being, to the all-inclusiveness, to that sense of complete integration of the whole world. We feel that everything in the world is being now integrated in political way, in business-like way, in economical way, in every way. The whole sense is that we are one world. It's the age of the mother that is breaking in, the age of the woman that is breaking in, of metaphysics that is breaking in. This is all that vestibule, so to say, in which we are in, which ushers in the 7,000 year period of love. So often people come and say to me, how many men have you in your class and how many women? And I always must say, well, just a small percentage of men compared with women, and then they think, what a pity. And I, in my heart, say, well, that's fine. Because that just shows what's coming. It's the woman, the mother sense in men, that is able to perceive what is happening. The male in us, he doesn't like it. So I'm not greatly disturbed that the percentage of the men that are in my classes are so small all over the world, because it is just showing what is happening, namely that the woman is the first one to perceive the true idea. Naturally, it's the woman in us, it's the woman in men and women. But it's the woman, the motherhood sense, the sense of metaphysics that is breaking in. I think Bucky, you call him Bucky? Bucky Mr. Fuller? Yeah. Bucky, he is very good on this thing. He says the next 1,000 year period is the 1,000 year period of the woman and of metaphysics. So you see how, again, in the Bible, there is that development, and you can ask yourself, who has brought about this 7,000-year period development? Was it some intelligent man that did it? No, it's a 7,000 year. It goes over nations and continents and generations and so on. Therefore, we can see there must be a law ruling independent of man. And just precipitating itself on mankind and forcing mankind to make those steps which are in line with the law of creativity. Now, these are 3 billion years, these are 7,000 years, you see, if the time element is no factor. You could take, instead of 7,000 years, you could take a man's life, a whole man's life, and see if a man's life is willing to obey, to be used, so to say, by the divine law, that he fulfills the 7 stages also. The man who did it was Jesus. And so we can perhaps put here Jesus' life, as shown in Matthew. You see, well, Jesus had a life, and his life was right from the beginning really coined and formed by the divine law, and therefore Matthew shows Jesus' whole life in that same order. First we have mind, we have the whole generation showing right from Abraham up to Joseph, a break, then Maria, you say Maria, yes.
Mary.
Mary. I have to speak in so many languages. Mary, then we have Mary, you see, then the birth of Jesus, that and the coming forth of the man Jesus, so creation. Then you have a second one, spirit, namely the three baptisms, the baptism of spirit, in submersion into spirit, baptism. The definition of baptism is completely coined with that sense of spirit, of purification. How is it exactly, emergence into spirit or submergence?
Submergence
in spirit. You see, you have again that purity of spirit, that onlyness of spirit. Then, afterwards come the temptations, where he had to prove his identity, soul's identity. So he had to prove his identity against all the opposition, against all the temptations, and so we have that wonderful passage on how he was able to preserve its identity to the point where the angels served him. Once the devil left him and the angels served him, there is a complete break in the text, and there is a fourth subject, and that is the Sermon on the Mount. Principle, teaching, interpretation. Can you see? Complete break. You can't mistake in Matthew. Once your spiritual ear is attuned to the categories, that's why we need categories, you see? That's why we can't work with a single verses. We just hear how these breaks come. How first it's all said how, where Jesus came from, the creative sense. Then when he is here, we have the baptism sense of spirit. Once the baptism are over, it's the soul sense of the temptations of handling animal magnetism. Once he has handled animal magnetism, he can really present the principle in the Sermon on the Mount, in which he gives a complete interpretation of the spiritual principle. Once he has given the whole spiritual interpretation of his teaching, there comes a fifth period, and you can hear it at once. He has finished the teaching, and he goes out and heals. If you study those chapters, it's enormous, the power that is released at that point, where he is in power of his mission, where he says, I will come and heal you, you see, where everything he does is, he is sure of his mission, of his life mission, and gives life through healing. And it's a period of great healing, of great multiplication, of the feeding of the multitudes, and so on. And then, when those healings are over, comes the sixth period, man. Then he shows forth that man is not really the son of man, but that he is a calculus of ideas. And that what constitutes man is that he is a compound idea. And that this compound idea has dominion over the compound belief of mortal mind. Therefore that the calculus of immortality is superseding the calculus of mortality and wipes it entirely out. Once he has shown that, he comes to the last, to the seventh stage, where he gives us the tone of love of complete salvation. There we have the Last Supper, beginning there with the Last Supper, with Judas' experience with Gethsemane, then the trial before Pilate, and the whole story there, then his crucifixion and his resurrection, showing there the really, again, like here, the telephanalistic plan, that he said, instead of saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The Aramaic Bible says, my God, for this hast thou chosen me. See, he can see now in the last period of love that the whole thing was moving towards that final climax, where he could show the purpose, the aim of his whole life, namely to prove to human sense that life is immortal, that life is spiritual, and that matter, enmity, jealousy, that all the hierarchical organization of theology and politics couldn't do a thing to him. It just went into that whole experience, facing every phase of evil, knowing that it just can't do a thing to him. That he said, well, to Pilate, you couldn't do a thing if God would not allow you to do it, or if God would not give you the power to do it. He just could see that everything in the whole world in this last period was helping him to make his final demonstration, that the earth will help the woman. That Pilate, Herod, all those were only helping to bring about his demonstration of life eternal, therefore the demonstration for which he has come into the world. So this is Jesus' life. Can you see that? Again, we can ask ourselves, why has Matthew written it in this way? Well, we may not even know who Matthew was, if it was the disciple Matthew who wrote it or not. He never told us why he did write it that way. He had to. Just as afterwards Mrs. A had to write the way she wrote. Therefore, again, we see that behind a man's life stands the same impulsion of the law of creativity as we have it in the days of creation, as we have it in the 1,000-year period, and as we have it in the evolution of life. Now, this is Jesus' life, of going over 30 years, but the very same thing we can take over a smaller span of life or a smaller experience. We can take any experience here, any experience which we have, which may last 20 years, which may last a week, which may last a day. It is always then, when a new idea is breaking in, just as we have seen this morning, that then we have the law of creativity which is at work in the smallest details. So that in every small detail of our life, we have the same law. And now comes the important point. As you see, the time element gets shorter and shorter here, shorter and shorter, until it comes to this point where it is no more, where there is no more time. Therefore, where this law of development or the law of creativity no more functions as a law of creativity, but as a law of business. You see? Here is now the important point which I wanted to show you. See, that this law of creativity, that is the linear way of thinking, is still a way of thinking which is dependent on time, which takes in the time element. And therefore we can see, though it is very important, though for our first step it's one of the biggest steps we can take, that this law of creativity is not the final law. It is just how we experience the infinite. But the infinite, as it has been shown, can show itself in big spaces of time, in billions of years, in 1,000-year periods, in a period of a human life, 30 years, perhaps of 10 years, of 1 week, of 1 day, until we find out that these seven really are not linear, but that they are, that they constitute being itself, and therefore are at the point of business, where there is no more time.